This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. Get to our next category. The Hawks coming up here in a couple minutes, but the XFL had its debut weekend, and I thought the early returns are extremely positive. The coverage, the excitement, the viewership numbers, all of these things were very, very positive. The question that comes out of it, and that I think most people will have, is, okay, what next? And does a lack of star power, because if I asked you who had the best individual game this weekend?
I'd probably say Cardale Jones. Because that's the only name I recognized.
And because he was chanting MVP. Austin Prohl
Matt
played
McGloin?
Pretty well. Yeah, like all of these different guys. Like they're players that play really, but it's not, they are not for the most part really recognizable names that are out there. And I asked you earlier this show, Paul, would you want to see Colin Kaepernick play in this league?
Yes, 100%. Now, I don't know if the XFL is still coming off with that hard-o stance that they had when they first announced themselves, where they're like, we're going to be the Pro-America League, which is something that they actually did. But at this point, I would love to see him out there. I don't think Kaepernick would ever do it, though. I think Kaepernick would feel like it's stooping down to a level that's beneath him. And honestly, I do think that the longer that he stays off a football field, the better it is for his cause and some of the things that he's trying to push. I do think that that kind of black ball set that's attached to him, I think that helps out what he's trying to do off the field.
And the 253 text in, what happened to Kaysom Williams of the Seattle Dragons? Look, this is a competitive league, and the guys that you spotlight as maybe the people that you expect to be the most recognizable or the most might not turn out to be the best on-field players. I think the best course for this league long-term is what they're doing, which is make this entirely about football and not about name recognition. Johnny Manziel would get headlines. Is that the kind of attention you want on your league? And not because Johnny Manziel may or may not be a jerk still or any of those things, but if it becomes a reclamation project league and all you're looking for is guys who didn't make it in the NFL, I think that gives your league a much different appearance than, hey, invest in this team where you don't know any of the guys and get to learn and support them. I think it's more risky to take the latter approach. I think that's actually better for the long-term health of your league, though.
Interesting. I think part of watching sports is we like to see one guy stand out above everyone else. Now, sometimes that comes because of name, and with Johnny Manziel, it would come because of name. Now, Johnny Manziel acting like he's not in the XFL with the little Twitter rant that he went on Friday saying, comeback season's still alive if y'all ain't no. Okay, just not playing for another league that's going to fold on you midway through the year. Dude, you violated a law that definitely got you kicked out of the CFL, whatever it was, I don't know, and then you joined the AAF out of desperation and you weren't even very good in there. Like, you have made your own bed. Enough with this Eddie Haskell routine acting like you're above something like this. No, the XFL is above you at this point, and they would be giving you an opportunity by letting you back out there. But if they would put him back out there, Danny, this is a guy that people would root for, or people like me would maybe root against. And I feel like that is something that would definitely add to the league. And I think you'd get that with Kaepernick, too. I mean, there are plenty of people that would root against Kaepernick, just as many as who would root for him.
If you do that, though, aren't you hitching your league's success to, hey, this guy who didn't, in Manziel's case, cut it in other professional leagues, in which case the signs are there that he might not cut it in this league just from a football sense, or that if it does succeed, he's just going to use this as a launching pad? You're not building your own brand. You're taking the leftovers from another brand.
But you have to sort of do that. Here's the thing. There's not going to be sustained star power in this league. That's the other thing. If there's someone who's really good, he's gone. He's going to go to the NFL once the XFL season's done, and maybe even before that. Maybe he gets signed in free agency or something like that in March, where the season's still taking place. So that's going to be something that the XFL has to get over. But you do need someone. You need individual players to get you to watch, whether they're guys that come out of college early because they're paid or something like that. Whatever the case, something I think they need a little extra. It was a really good start. You're right, Danny. This was about as well as a league kickoff could go. And considering all the time that they put into it and the preparation, it really looked like a competent product. But I need a little more. I don't want to see two teams that are completely equal and completely level going up against each other. And that's sort of the vibe I got watching these games.
I think some of those players will emerge, though, too. And I think one of the problems with certain professional sports leagues is they're not, you can't relate to the stars, whether that is Odell Beckham, his off the field issues and just antics. And there's so much money involved in professional sports that sometimes the narratives and the stories, the players, you can't really attach them yourself to them because it's so unrelatable. But when you hear some of the stories, which is one of the things that I loved hearing the most on these broadcasts, of these guys who are like, oh, well, I was living in my van for 3 years and to make it here. Or there's these stories. I think that, too, telling that narrative, there's a reason, like, reality TV and those types of shows, people, like, are really attached to Last Chance U and all those ones because they get to hear the stories of these players. So I think that will also help those players emerge.
I agree with you, Lydia. And I think the more weeks that are played, the more people are going to recognize specific players. I do think, though, that they're, you know, on those reality shows that you mentioned, characters develop, and sometimes the characters aren't exactly people that we want, you know, we want to root for. Like, sometimes it's like Ronnie from the Jersey Shore is an absolute disaster.
One shot, kid. One shot. I will say that, though, that was entirely developed within that show. You don't, you can grow attached to people. And to what Lydia's saying, I think is a, the challenge for the XFL and what kind of will determine the viability is if we get attached to the players that are there. If we start to identify, and look, it's not going to be, if you put them on an NFL field, would they compete? Probably not at that level. Like, the team would get smoked. But if they're competing against other similarly competitive teams, I think we're going to see things that we look. Look, Brock was plenty impressed by the dude that hurled over someone. The other part of the league that I absolutely loved, and this is my favorite part, was they let you inside what the coach is saying to the quarterback and to the offense or to the defensive players. You got to hear the headset communication. Here is Jim Zorn calling in the play.
Trips right, 21 ace dancer. Trips right, 21 ace dancer. You run the option route, Trey.
Now, it's so boring and so basic, and it's Jim Zorn, so it's really bland. I loved hearing it. It sounds like a foreign language, and that's something we have not heard because the NFL is so reluctant. Like, it's basically so sanitized what we get from the NFL product. We get to see inside locker rooms after victories, right? When the guy gives the old rah-rah, here, two, three, hoots, hoot, hoot, hooray, and somebody's dancing in the background and maybe making chopper sounds, whatever the hell that is. Or we get to hear the mic'd up segments where as soon as someone says something interesting, like I was seeing ghosts out there like Sam Darnold, they're like, oh, that was a big indiscretion. You shouldn't have said that. We can only have boring things said of mic'd up players.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I need more of the non-boring things happening in this. And, you know, if you go back and you go to the first game that we saw, the game between the Dragons and the Defenders, there was a really, really amusing moment where an offensive lineman in cut number 12, I think it was an offensive lineman for the Dragons, is walking off the field, and Diana Russini comes up to him, and they start talking, and then this happened.
I don't know. There's just a lot of chatter after play. We're trying to make some stuff happen, and they're doing a little extra pushing and shoving. We're trying to get our job done. That just...
Like, there's a cuss that went over the air. And here's the thing. Like, I know they don't want that to come across, and they pulled away. Like, they cut the microphone feed as soon as he dropped the bomb right there. But I want more of that. That's real to me, as opposed to after a while, like hearing the play call, I was like, okay, I get it. I understand that this is a play call.
You didn't like it?
After a while, I was like, there's too much of it. Yeah.
Interesting.
I think that's sporadically used. I think that, like, in third down situations and in important situations, I think it could add a little bit of extra to it. But when it's every single down, I think it sort of takes away from the significance of the moment. If that makes sense.
Lydia had pointed out that they stopped doing that as much. The Seattle game was the first of the schedule, and they stopped doing as much of that. So maybe they're going to learn and be able to recognize how to intersperse it. That, to me, the hearing some of those play calls and hearing some of that communication and how a coach takes responsibility or how a coach expresses frustration was one of my favorite things, just because we never see that in the NFL. And there is an opportunity, because this is just a league that's building. I think you can get a window into how a football team works that you simply do not get from the NFL product, and that's going to make it more identifiable. Anybody who watched Seattle's game comes away knowing that Austin Prohl's a pretty good wide receiver.
Yep.
He's got the same last name as Ricky Prohl, who people remember from his time in the league, and that Jim Zorn is unfailingly polite and pretty much will under no circumstances drop any of those sort of cusses. Like, he's not the kind of guy that's going to go nuts on anyone, and it was really endearing, right? Like, it was really endearing,
darn
the sort
it
of things.
Yeah. Darn it!
Like, when he's able to say that, or he's kind of like, come on, you guys, you got to be able to do it. Here was him saying it was his fault.
My fault. Darn it. Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to hear furious Jim Zorn?
Here's furious Jim. Let's get it.
He is so mad.
Oh, come on, man. Punt it. Punt it. Come on, man. I got to have exactly it if I'm not there. That's okay.
It's funny because he says that that's okay at the end. I'm sure that was somebody up on the headset from upstairs that was communicating with him. But it really sounded like he was going through like the 12 stages or whatever, 5 stages of grief. It's like, come on, man. Punt it. It's okay.
Yeah, that's right.
One of my favorite post-game quotes for you guys.
We really did a nice job adjusting to an offensive lineman getting a owie.
A boo-boo.
He got banged. He got dinged. Yeah, all of the different things that were there. I thought it was a really promising weekend. And Paul, to your point about star power, it's interesting to look back at the USFL because one of the most successful USFL franchises was Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay Bandits. And they didn't have an identifiable court. They didn't have Jim Kelly like the Houston Gamblers had or Doug Flutie like the New Jersey Generals had. They built a team, and it included a lot of guys that were kind of locally known and people, and they made it about the experience of going to the game, and they built a fairly loyal fan base. Now, it helped. The Bucks were the joke of a franchise
that
at that
helps
point.
A lot. And, I mean, that's why you saw some of the excitement with the D.C. crowd, because the Redskins are a joke right now.
Right, and it's if you make it a fun experience, and I actually think that it's not – the success of the league isn't going to be based on who emerges from that group that's not good enough to be in the NFL right now. I think the success of it will be, like, can you get the fan base to buy into your team? Not a player or two, but buy into your team. And that's, look, getting eyeballs is not the challenge. Like, the saying, like, oh, my gosh, people watch this weekend and that's the big victory. It's football. It's pro football. Nothing else is on. We're going to watch it. Getting people to come back means that they have to invest and identify with your product.
Will people watch next weekend? Do you think that right now the people will watch next weekend, given what we saw the first week? Because the first week, okay, it's a novel thing. Did people enjoy what they saw enough to come back next week? This coming weekend, it's not exactly the busiest weekend. I think this is the NBA All-Star weekend, so you have that. But outside of that, like, what else really is there as an alternative? There isn't a whole lot.
I think that you will have people back this weekend.
I do,
I think
too.
I think it's going to be a challenge for them to have games that were as good this weekend as they were last weekend, because usually an inaugural league puts so much into that first weekend, and then it's all of a sudden, okay, we've got to reboot. We've got to get back. You've got to stage the second game as well. I think the signs are positive where how many tickets Seattle has sold, the fact that they're opening it up more. I'm looking forward to it.
The execution was good for a first week. For the second week, and this is going to be on the broadcast teams, it is now about developing characters. They have to find a way to do it. How do they go about doing it? I really don't know the solution to it, but when you are starting a new league, this is the next step. You got to find compelling people. And I don't think that they want to go quite down the XFL road of old, where they were turning it into a wrestling circus, but they have to find guys that people want to relate to, as Lydia was bringing up. And they also have to find people that are just, let's be honest, a little bit loose in the head, a little crazy, because we like to watch guys like that on the football field as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the XFL.
Get a lozenge, bro.
You mean that's what you'd like to see it? How about compare that? That was the old XFL. Here's the new.
You gotta be kidding me. Oh, my gosh.
He even says, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was after there was a sort of inexplicable fumble. Our next category.
Welcome to the
2020
Hawkskers.
This category, Paul, is a controversial category.
It's controversial.
It is for best director. We have four candidates, four nominees for best director of the 2019 Seattle Seahawks season. First, we have Pete Carroll, who is the oldest coach in the NFL with the most amount of enthusiasm, who for the 8th time in 10 seasons got his team to the postseason.
That's a layup.
We have offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer, who was able to steer this team to, up until the final couple weeks of the season when running backs started dropping like flies, they were a top five offense.
It was an impressive year.
We have defensive coordinator Ken Norton, who, well, let's face it, he was saddled with a group that had lost most of the star power for the past few years and had one of the most difficult seasons of any defense in the Pete Carroll's 10-season tenure. And we also have special teams coach Brian Schneider, who, well, also, actually, I just looked back at what happened the first month of the season when the Saints were returning punts for touchdowns. We're throwing him out. He's no longer on the list of award candidates.
The milk got chunky, too.
That's exactly right. You had some questions about the kicker, and it came out at the end, but we're not. The winner of this award is... Turns out we're not handing out one this year.
Wait, why? Why?
Because we decided that they'd kind of gotten high-centered and weren't able to get past the spot where they've been for the past 5 years. And it was a little bit better than last year, but you lose three of your final four regular season games. We're just not going to give one out.
Oh, wow. Listen, he's one of the cooking people. Look at that. One of the cooking people is going to blame it all on Pete Carroll, who had a successful season.
It's not about blaming. It's just like, does anybody get a gold star this season? Because an award should mean something. We're not giving out participation trophies.
Are we now going to give out an award to the most militant member of Seahawks Twitter who has been calling for Pete Carroll to be decapitated? Because I feel like the route you're taking, Danny, it's a real twist.
I feel like I've just been thrown in with all the cooking people. I don't identify with them.
Oh, Paul. You're one of the cooking people now. And I know, and you know what? Maybe that was tongue in cheek, but you were a cooking person now, Danny.
Where's your fight, man?
It's here,
where
chef.
Where is it?
I've got it, chef.
Then wake up, you donut.
Yes, chef.
Now you got to speak with a British accent. You got to yell at people and put on an apron right now.
It's Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Subbing into the game, we have DJ.
DJ! What up?
In the house. How's it going, man?
It's going good. It's going good. It's been a fun time working with you guys.
Appreciate
you
that.
You haven't sucked up enough.
He has to say that, though. Right, exactly.
I know, pretty much.
You have to
He's also
that.
Been really quiet the whole time.
Yeah,
have
that's true.
You scared to talk, DJ?
No, I just don't want to interfere with you guys.
I mean, listen, maybe you need to interfere with us. We forget what we're talking about half the time.
From the 425, you should give out participation trophies. It's the only way this show would win an award.
Oh, well... That's true, and I would put that up on a mantle.
That's exactly right.
It's still a trophy. If no one looks closely at why the trophy's there, it's still a trophy. It looks cool.
DJ, what have we gotten around the NFL?
All right, first up, according to Ian Rappaport, tight end Greg Olsen is visiting the Redskins today. He'll then visit the Seahawks on Wednesday and is expected to make a decision by the end of the week.
I like the order. You always want to bat last in the free agent visits. You want him to see everything else. Because especially you want to have the final impression, right? Especially if it's playing here. And look, geography might play a part in this. He's a guy, he's from New Jersey, played college in Miami. He was in Chicago for a bit, but he's been on the East Coast. I like the fact that they're going to get him last.
I'm curious about Washington's pitch. Bruce Allen isn't there anymore. You have Ron Rivera there instead of Jay Gruden, who, no offense to Jay Gruden, I don't think Gruden's a bad coach, but he's just boring. It's different. They have a different pitch, I think, than they've had in years past. I'm just curious about them going forward in free agency. But I do think that right now, I mean, between the cap space that they have and Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll and the lack of a state income tax in Washington, Seattle is the most attractive free agent destination for any prospective free agent this offseason. And if they want Greg Olsen, they should get Greg Olsen. That simple.
Here's what I think Washington's pitch to him is. We want you to be part of the culture that we're resetting here. You're the guy that I've picked, and I think it's offering him a 2 or 3 year contract. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think Seattle's going to be like, hey, this is opportunity for you to win a ring. It's 1 year. It's $3, $4, $5 million, whatever Seattle sets the value as. But I think it's going to be the number of years that Olsen wants, not just to commit himself for, but for the team he's going to commit to him for.
According to Tom Pelissero, Michigan State requested an interview with 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh for its head coaching job. Saleh informed school officials that he plans on staying in San Francisco because he feels like he has unfinished business.
Now, I believe Saleh is from Michigan. I think he played at one of the directional Michigans. And was a graduate assistant there. I'm not sure if it was the Chippewas or exactly who it was, but he played at a directional Michigan. Is this the right decision for Solich? He's a hot candidate right now. There's no guarantee he's going to be in a year, though.
Northern Michigan.
Northern Michigan, oh, my bad.
I didn't even know there was a Northern
Michigan.
Yeah,
how dare you, Danny?
What, you were unaware of the directional?
What disrespect.
Can you have Eastern without having a Northern?
What do you mean?
Huh? Can you have, like, we have Eastern Washington and Western Washington. Like, if you
have Central.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess we don't have a Northern Washington.
No.
We don't have a Southern Washington.
Listen, I'm lost. I'm lost to so many schools. They're in all different directions. Here's the thing. Robert Saleh. You better hope the defense is as good as it was this past season. And the odds of it being this good again, I would venture to say, are not high. You got to figure out what you're going to do with Armstead this offseason. You're going to be able to franchise tag him. Good luck with that. You're going to have to cut some people along the way to make that happen. Richard Sherman's another year of age, and he did not look very good in that Super Bowl. He looked a little slow. I don't think it's any guarantee that the 49ers defense will be as good as it was last year. I'm sure it will still be a good defense, but it's a shame for him. This should have been his year to get a head coaching gig somewhere. I don't think I'd want to go to college coaching ranks if I'm an NFL assistant coach. I just think that to be a college coach, it's just so much work, so much time, so much energy. I don't think it's worth it, to be honest.
I don't know if it prepares you to get... If your goal is to be an NFL head coach, I don't know if going and being a college head coach is a good entry path for that, because you have to be so good as a college coach.
Yep.
You have to be so good as a college coach to bridge that gap that you're more likely kind of waiting. And if your end goal is NFL head coach, I don't think taking going from coordinator to college head coach is the way to go.
The drawback of also stepping in for someone who had been there almost 15 years in Mark D'Antonio is that the school gets an irrational sense of self. Michigan State, after Nick Saban and Mark D'Antonio, clearly thinks that they are very good as a college football program. And in reality, much like Michigan, they are one of many programs that has the potential to be great but never actually will. So if you want to go there and deal with all the crazy boosters who think that you should be a 10-win team every single season, good luck with that. To me, pass. Hard pass on anything college coaching related.
Gil Brandt of NFL.com released his list of the most clutch players of 2019. Russell Wilson didn't even make the list as an honorable mention.
Cancel him.
This is the really hard... Gil Brandt's been around the league for an awfully long time. And he was one of the first directors. He's kind of considered a pioneer in NFL scouting circles, because when the draft was first happening and people were still drafting guys that they hadn't even seen, he put together and compiled... He changed the way NFL teams scouted teams, scouted potential talent. That said, this shows that there's not a safety net there, or he's not recognized. Like, what the hell? Like, he had to just forgotten him, right?
Yes, that's all I can think of.
Like, he has to have forgotten him, and I don't want to rip on the guy who's older and has been around the league for an awfully long time, yet when you put out a list like that, this seems really... It seems like I'm forced to rip on him for, like, don't put out lists anymore like that if you can't remember the guys that should be on there.
It's a top two quarterback.
Yes. You can't.
But he's not clutch.
And that's the one thing of, if you were going to say, and I'm not even, God help me, I don't even really believe in clutch and Russell's clutch.
The Seahawks only played in 75% of their games being like one score games. So, wait, was it even more than that? Was it 80%? I'm not even sure. But yeah, he wasn't clutch.
I don't want to be unkind to our elders, though. Like, isn't there something about that of, like, can't we just say, like, it's a bad list, but Gil Brandt's fine, and we should just leave him alone?
It's such a glaring omission. No, you have to bring it up. Shame.
Come on.
Shame.
He's like this old grandfatherly guy. He does no harm to anyone.
No, but here's the thing.
I feel like it's somebody from the 1970s that's getting thrown into current internet culture. And, like, he would have absolutely no idea what's going on. Like, what? These people on Twitter are roasted? Like, he can't even program a VCR. And we're going to ask him to deal with hot take media.
Yeah. I don't even think he knows I think a VCR might even be a little ahead of his time. But here's the thing. Like, Gil's obviously forgotten more about football than I will ever know. But at the same time, a lot of these guys who have been in the game for a long period of time, the Bill Polians of the world, they love to act like
that resume of theirs means that they are as on top of the league as they possibly could be. And in reality, we see this with ex-players, Hall of Famers like Deion Sanders, who forgot that Kevin Byard, an all-pro safety, was an actual all-pro safety when he was tweeting at him. He thought he was a fan. Like, these things happen, and it bothers me when it happens, because these guys should be self-aware, should be aware enough of the second-best quarterback in the game or an all-pro safety. It's not that hard.
Yeah, it's not. The one difference between Gil Brandt and Bill Polian is that Polian's a jerk with fake teeth, and Gil Brandt's at least a nice older
man.
He's
got the dentures? I didn't know that.
It's certainly. There's nothing about that when I've seen him looks like they could possibly be real, and he's a jerk.
You would have drafted Tom Brady in the first round if he could.
Yeah, I'll tell you that. It's Danny and Gallant. Coming up next, we have one more category of the Hawkskers. We also have the opportunity to talk about what exactly Seattle should be doing as they put together their shopping list for the offseason. That's ahead.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant, the XFL debut over the weekend of the Jim Zorn Coaches Show, I believe, is going to be coming on the John Clayton Show, which follows us from 10 to noon. You also have an opportunity, if you want to go to 710sports.com/win. Opportunity to look at your chance to get four tickets to the Seahawks, Tampa Bay, the home opener here at CenturyLink Field, which is going to be there on Saturday, February 15th. The XFL debut is one thing. In the NFL, we're getting geared up for the offseason acquisition. The next stop on the calendar is going to be the scouting combine. And that's when really the free agent market will start to take shape. We'll start to get a sense of who's going to be franchised, who's going to be available. And it's time to start prioritizing. I think we know what Seattle's needs are, but who we see out there that might fill those needs. And Paul, you started by asking a question. We've got to come up with a board of people that we're interested in, of how we follow this free agency period, as well as the draft. And we started out by shamelessly ripping off the big board.
Right? The big board. There's a show that I grew up listening to in Boston that does this thing called the big board, going up to a draft. Typically, they pick a bunch of players in the draft, and they're like, okay, this team fits the Patriots' needs at X, Y, and Z. And I thought to myself, okay, we can do this as far as the Seahawks for the draft. And over time, we can gradually narrow it down. We could do the same thing for free agency at this point. So I feel like at this point in time, your suggestions are more than welcome. Text them in. But what should be the first giant list that we put together of potential Seahawk additions in free agency? And over time, we can cut it down just based off of who fits the system. Who do we actually buy as being able to do the things that they did in their last stop here with Pete Carroll and with Ken Norton Jr. on the defense or on the offense with Brian Schottenheimer, and take it from there. So I am very curious as to people would like to see the Seahawks bring aboard. And I've also got a couple of guys myself.
Who's at the top of your list?
If I look at it and I think about what they needed the most out of, and what they would be able to find and plug in right away, Chris Harris, the slot cornerback for the Denver Broncos, is my number one right now. I feel like you can sign him. You're going to have to pay a little bit for him. But as a guy who was, I think, in his, towards his middle 30s, that's a guy that I think you could definitely convince with your cap space. And on top of that, with Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, we're close. You're not close in Denver. You're not going to be close in a lot of places. But this spot, you're going to be able to be plugged in right away as a slot corner. You're going to be looked to as a defensive leader. And I feel like right now, if I had to put a number one, that's my number one.
Pros for him is that he is a versatile corner who excels playing in the slot. And that was a spot that last year, whether it was because of how the Seahawks viewed their personnel or because of what Seattle wanted to do on defense, they played less nickel defense than anyone else.
Yep.
I think there'll be a lot of conversation this offseason about how that actually worked for them. He can also play on the outside. He's a veteran. He's very tough. He certainly fits into the style of play. The cons would be not necessarily his age, but sort of that age-cost combination. You're paying a lot for an older cornerback. The biggest con for me is that we haven't necessarily seen older cornerbacks come here and excel. In fact, the biggest free agent or open market flop, he wasn't really a free agent. Kerry Williams was let go by the Philadelphia Eagles. He came here and he didn't last the season. And that was a guy that they spent money on. He simply couldn't do what they wanted him to do. And that was a little bit of buyer beware, that Seattle's generally been better developing their own corners than they have been going out and getting somebody. But Justin Coleman shows that this was the it's not necessarily that they can't get someone from outside the system, because Coleman was basically given to them by the New England Patriots, and he came here and was awesome.
Yeah, he was really good. And the problem is they probably thought, because of how good Pete Carroll's been in the past coaching up young defensive backs, that they would be able to make one of these young players be the guy. And Jamar Taylor, yikes, it was not the case. And for whatever reason, we did not see Ugo Amadi after week one. I don't know why that was, but that's something I hope that we get to see next season if they don't go after somebody at slot corner in free agency. But I think right now, like, that's a guy that I don't think there's any risk to signing him. I don't think that he is going to fail here should you sign him, where with a lot of pass rushers, I could definitely see that happening. And with specific wide receivers as well, I think you could see that happening too.
My number one is AJ Green.
AJ Green
is my number one objective. And it's not because I think he fits Seattle's biggest need best. I think it's because you have an opportunity to add a guy who is a real difference maker. And I think you can make him a sales pitch that will be attractive to him in a way. He's already had the biggest contract of his career. He's kind of through the money-making portion. And now he's looking for that best combination of winning and financial. I don't think that money is not an issue for him. I certainly think that he's going to, but I think the possibility of signing someone and adding AJ Green to this team, that really excites me.
What's it going to take? Because isn't he under contract still? I mean, don't you have to trade for him, or is he an actual unrestricted free agent?
I believe that he's headed toward, or most people believe he's going to head toward free agency. I like the idea of being able to go out.
He is a free agent. You are right. You know what? I'm curious as to what he would ask for on the open market, because that's a guy that, I mean, you know, the pelts are on the wall with him, but there have been a lot of injuries as well that you could bring up in negotiations with him.
I'm okay with the injury history. And maybe this is an opportunity where you'd keep it shorter and you say, hey, like, we just do this for a 1 or 2 year shot and see how it works out. I like the idea of betting high on the upside and saying, my biggest concern about him is not his injury history. My biggest concern is how much would he want the ball if he's healthy?
Exactly. I think some of these number one wide receivers, it is a real hard sell to go from being that guy to being somebody else. And I mean, at this point, is it a definitive that he would even be the number two wide receiver on this team? No, he's probably the number three behind Tyler Lockett. And from all the things that we hear about DK Metcalf's work ethic, I don't think he's overtaking DK either.
Now, the fact is, he could end up being their best receiver. Like, I wouldn't say that's outside. I mean, he's a really physically talented player. But it's also not out of the realm of the possibility that he would have the third most catches among your wide receivers. And so it's kind of, he's got to buy into that idea that your opportunities might not only vary by week, but you're going to have to compete for your opportunities. And he hasn't been in that position for a long, long time in Cincinnati. I mean, he has been, for a decade, one of this league's most talented receivers.
Yes.
And if he buys into that idea, I absolutely, the idea of paying him $10 million for a season, I'd absolutely love to see that. Like, for that kind of top-end talent.
If he still has it. $10 million is a bargain. I would say, though, that the Seahawks should be very, very cautious when it comes to signing a guy with an injury history and bringing him in for a one-year prove-it kind of deal, because you just had that with Ziggy Ansah. I do wonder about AJ Green right now, Danny. I don't know that he's still the same guy.
I don't know either. I like the contract to AJ or to Ziggy Ansah, and not because it worked out well, but because the downside to it, if it doesn't work out, it's just sort of rinse, lather, repeat. You're like, okay, he didn't work out, he's gone. But are you going to get someone that's going to have a better a more upside than AJ Green?
Possibly.
I think he's got that highest combination.
But I mean, the big problem with playing Ansah, trying to make Ziggy Ansah a thing like fetch, might have cost you putting a guy like a LJ Collier on the field more and giving him more opportunities. You tried and tried and tried to make Ziggy Ansah a thing, and it just never happened. After a certain point, you got to wonder, okay, like, well, how did we cost ourselves long term by trying to go with this guy that clearly didn't have it anymore? I'm not saying
that's a really good point, Paul. That you're right. Them trying to get Ziggy Ansah up and ready and to go cost them development time with LJ Collier.
And right, if you keep AJ Green and he doesn't work out, I mean, John Ursua, man. I mean, he's just waiting in the wings, not playing.
Now you're just trying to antagonize me. We have one final category for our Hawkskers, and I'm going to say that we don't have a winner yet. We're just accepting nominations.
Welcome to the
2020
Hawkskers.
We're supposed to have a winner for these categories. I just have a question. Who is their best supporting actor? Who is Seattle's second best player this year? It's so clear. Like, the category for lead actor was four different versions of Russell Wilson. It was Russell Wilson. It was R.C. Wilson. It was Seattle's short quarterback, and it was Sierra's husband. Like, those were the four candidates for it. Is it Bobby Wagner? Was he their best supporting actor this year?
No, I can't.
Jadeveon Clowney? Jadeveon Clowney had the best singular performances outside of Russell Wilson.
Clowney was awesome, but
also
I don't
banged
think it's
up.
Clowney either. I don't think it's Clowney either.
Is it Tyler Lockett?
It's got to be Tyler Lockett. I think it has to be
Tyler Lockett for three quarters of the season, but by the end of the year, DK Metcalf was your second best receiver.
Listen, sometimes the best supporting actor's character dies, and so you can't be in the whole movie.
What a morbid way to look at it. He had a good three quarters of a season,
then
he died.
Yeah.
Chris Carson rushes for 1,200
Same
yards.
Same thing.
Who do you think was Seattle's second best player of the year? Text it in right now to 710-710. We'll be back to raise flags, pick up flags, or throw flags next.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
This is a great time of the show. We all gather around. Includes DJ, who is producing for us today, Lydia Paul. We throw our flags. First, that question of who had the second best season among the Seahawks, who was their best supporting actor. We got some really good suggestions from the 206. Chris Carson, without a doubt. All you have to do is look at their results without him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Similar argument could be made for Quandre Diggs. Those actually might be your two candidates. Diggs and Carson.
If it's between the two, I'm picking Carson. Because, I mean, the offense...
But you had Rashad Penny hero games as well.
That's true. Penny was able to come
in. I just mean, if you go wins above replacement style, if you go the next best option, I think you have to give it to Diggs.
We would have gone to the Super Bowl without Carson. Second best, not even close, from the 425. Quandre's support allowed the rest of the team to play better. That's from the 206. That's absolutely true, too. Very interesting discussion.
The defense did feel different with him aboard. Unfortunately, it wasn't different enough against the Packers. I feel like you really missed Carson. And I don't know, maybe do you combine Chris Carson and Rashad Penny into one supporting actor? Can you do that?
No, it's only one guy.
Well, if you can't do that, then it's Tyler Lockett.
Can you imagine if they did that at the Oscars? It's a tie!
if you did that, you would have to make one of the guys ride piggyback on the other one up there. You could only be standing in one spot. Fine, it's two guys, but somebody's got to ride piggyback.
Who would win the tiebreaker? The person with the most like passive aggressive smile of who wins?
Maybe. All right, let's throw flags. You want to start, Paul?
Yeah, I'm going to raise a flag. 23 years ago today was one of the most important days in video game history, and I'm talking about a sports video game. That was the day that Mario Kart 64 was released in North America. That is a game that I have spent countless hours playing. It's been a while since I have played it seriously, but it was with Lydia Cruz, it was with Taylor Jacobs, it was with Stacey Rost, right here at the station. Lydia had the most intense face I think I've ever seen while playing Mario Kart.
It's always compete, Paul.
Always got to compete. You got Lydia, game breaker on the Mario Kart tracks. Listen, Mario Kart's a fantastic game, and I think it deserves a shout-out. It's a game that, honestly, still holds up. You can still play that game today, 23 years later, and it's still a pretty fun experience.
It's a good one. Is that your favorite game? You pick one video game, that's your favorite?
My favorite game of all time is The Elder Scrolls Skyrim. I have lost entire days playing that game, and I'm ashamed of how addictive that game has been to me in the past. Like, it's one of those games that I've had to sell to get away from me, but I get the game back. It's like an addiction. Can't handle it.
Have you bought it multiple times?
Yes. Three.
That's great. I think my favorite is 94 NCAA college football on the Sega Genesis.
Ooh. Okay,
yeah, that was that spawned many fist fights over the Genesis, and I dominated at that game. Lydia, flags.
I'm going to throw a flag on the Houston Astros. Because not only of the sign-stealing scandal, but we got the Wall Street Journal report this weekend that said they referred to it as codebreaker / the dark arts, which is an insult on multiple fronts, okay? You are not magical enough to refer to yourself to anything having to do with Harry Potter, And then two, what do you think? This is the imitation game and you're doing some like genius code breaking skills? You're Benedict Cumberbatch? No, you're not. You're just cheating using a live feed. Like, you're not actually masterfully breaking a code. So get out of here with that.
Yeah, you're banging on a trash can after watching video. That's not some sort of higher... I agree. That's a very well-worn...
We're going to break an unbreakable code and win the war.
It could be Slytherin, though. I mean, I could see Slytherin doing some nefarious things like that.
Yeah, but at least Slytherin's magical. Harry almost ended up in Slytherin, okay?
That's true.
So let's just not even put that in the same category. What you're doing is not magical.
That would be a great 30 for 30.
You don't even deserve the dark arts.
TJ! Are you familiar with this part of the show?
Oh, yes. I'm throwing a flag on NBA refs because on Friday, Portland Trail Blazers against Utah Jazz, really good NBA game. Both teams were making a run and everything. Damian Lillard was putting on a show. And then he goes to drive to the hoop on a game-tying layup and clear goaltending on Rudy Gobert. Nothing is called. Refs tell CJ McCollum, which he says post-game, oh, it wasn't even close to a goaltend. Very obvious goaltending. And it costs the Blazers a game in a tight playoff race. And I just got to throw my flag on the refs. How is that play not reviewable?
It was horrible, DJ. And that the NBA doesn't have a very easy solution for that. Like, you have to have a challenge to challenge something like that is ridiculous. That's one that can very easily be looked at. You have a stoppage in play after the basket. I understand that they maybe don't want the game to get as sloggy as it sometimes does down the stretch, but that was such an obvious call, and they had no way to overturn it.
Well, the best part was to hear an online, A, I think it's funny that the Portland Trailblazers took it in the shorts. Let me make it clear. Like, I love it when a team that's not my team absolutely gets hosed by a call, and they did. My second favorite part about it was people who would argue, and primarily Jazz fans, were like, the ball's still on the way up. It hit the backboard.
Yeah.
As soon as it hits the backboard and then gets touched by anyone, it's a goaltend.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if it's going up. It does. Once it hits the backboard, you can't touch it. And it wasn't even close. It hit the backboard and it come off the backboard.
Can we get a Damian Lillard diss track at the refs?
Oh, that'd be great.
It actually would be good. Lillard's a really good rapper.
Yeah.
He's
good.
Yeah.
Let's not go. He's good for an athlete.
Well, I thought he was
good.
He's
better than... Yes, he's good. It's. I think people get a little carried away with, like, oh my gosh, he's great. Like, he couldn't make an album that would sell well if he wasn't Dame Lillard.
That's fair. I'm musically challenged, but, I mean, I've listened to it, and I'm like, okay, that's pretty solid. I don't rap. You cool kids?
My flag will be raised for the most awkward thing I saw over the weekend. Bob Knight returned to Assembly Hall at Indiana University for the first time in 20 years. He has been out of favor. He's been in a feud with the school that fired him, really after they gave him an exceptional amount of patience and tolerance for various disasters he created, and then he was mad at them because he was fired. The thing that I'm raising the flag over is an exchange between Bob Knight and Dick Vitale
that
I still do not understand what happened.
I don't either.
It's this feel-good moment. Everybody's there, and my understanding is that Dick Vitale and him are friends. Like, I don't think they're not friends. Vitale reaches up and kind of grabs him at the back of the neck when they're kind of quasi-embracing. And then Knight knocks his hand away and looks like he's going to swing on him. I still don't understand what happened, but I'm here for the awkwardness.
I don't either. I don't know how many people have had this moment happen before, but it reminded me of someone, like, reaching for somebody who forgets who they are. And all of a sudden that person just, like, was saying to themselves, whoa, who are you? I don't know if it was a case of that, but...
It was weird. I'm fascinated by Bob Knight. Bob Knight is one of my... And the fact that he's reunited, or whatever you want to call it, with Indiana University, I'm not saying it's good or bad. He is a fascinating character. He's kind of our Woody Hayes. Our generation's Woody Hayes.
Interesting.
Where Woody socked a player in a game and then, like, basically got relegated
to... Yeah, I remember that.
He got booted out of the club. It's kind of like what happened to Bob Knight. That is going to do it for us. DJ, thank you very much. You did a great job.
DJ!
Thank you guys for letting me tag along.
Lydia, you're always fantastic. He is Paul Gallant, and he needs something other than a schmedium board to cover all of the offseason acquisitions.
And he is Danny O'Neill, and he just gets so uncomfortable when we talk about handsome men, which is a shame. So long, farewell, and we'll see you tomorrow.